Today marks the 100th anniversary of the beginning of one of the bloodiest battles of the First World War. In the complete three months of fighting, 500,000 Allied and German soldiers were killed, wounded or went missing in the Western Front as a consequence of the Battle of Passchendaele. In this archive footage, a veteran speaks of the terrible conditions he experienced.
When the rains came, of course, you couldn't have dug anywhere. And that's when people were floundering in the mud. Men were dying in mud, not from wounds, but by falling off the duckboards.
A memorial service is currently taking place today near Ypres, attended by the Prime Minister and senior members of the royal family, along with thousands of relatives of those who fought in the battle. We're joined by Dr. Nick Lloyd, military historian at King's College London, the author of Passchendaele, A New History, and Professor Richard Grayson, an expert in World War One at Goldsmiths, University of London. Richard had uncles, great uncles, who fought at Passchendaele, one of whom died there. Welcome to both of you. Good afternoon. Can we give a sense, first of all, Nick, really, of the significance, the scale, the importance of this battle in 1917?
Yes, good afternoon. It's one of the great battles of the First World War, the great campaign of 1917 that was aimed at breaking through the front in Flanders, rolling up the coast, seizing the U-boat bases at Ostend and Zeebrugge, and hopefully, you know, having some kind of major strategic effect on the war.
What was the political context, Richard Grayson? Was there a debate in 1917 amongst the Allies about the wisdom of this particular offensive?
Well, I think that it still has to be viewed in the context of coalition warfare and the need for the British to defend the Ypres area and ideally strengthen their positions around. It is something that rapidly becomes politically controversial. Lloyd George very soon becomes critical of it. But I think there's a sense in the lead up to the battle that this is a necessary front for the Allies and for the British to advance on.
I have a quote here from Lloyd George's memoirs of 1938, in which he says it was one of the greatest disasters of the war. No soldier of any intelligence now defends this senseless campaign.
I think it probably is the battle, at least on the Western Front, that it is hardest to find defenders of. Even for the Somme, among revisionist military historians, a lot of people would point to learning on the Somme that has an effect eventually in 1918. That's more complicated with Passchendaele, although there is a view that I think has some value, that the bite-and-hold tactics that were deployed to great effect in 1918 are first used here and tried out. But even for those who would point to that as a lesson from Passchendaele, it all could have been done very differently.
There has been some debate, Nick, over the years about the human toll, the human cost of this battle in terms of the number who died, the number who were injured, the number missing in action. What's our best understanding now of all of that?
Well, it is one of those very complex questions in terms of, you know, casualty figures. The Great War are actually a very, very difficult thing to get into. But I think if you're looking at, you know, the British casualties, about 244,000. We reckon as about 75,000 of them is killed in action, as killed. The German figure could be anywhere between 217,000, 235,000 casualties. German medical history, I think, gives it about 55,000 dead. So it's obviously not as high as the British, but it's roughly even. Again, those figures should be taken with a little bit of caution, I suppose. But it's an extremely bloody battle. It's not the worst battle by any means.
Yeah, even with that caution, the resulting human cost is enormous by any definition. With the benefit of historical insight at Nick, do you think militarily that offensive was justified?
Well, I think, you know, that is the great question, and that's the question that's echoed down the years. I think that in terms of Passchendaele, I think clearly mistakes are made. But I think I echo the point that was made before by Professor Grayson about the different phases of the battle are more successful than others. The phases in September and early October, when the British change tactics to bite and hold, is pretty good in terms of what you can do on the Western Front at that time. But I think we should see Passchendaele as not necessarily futile, but within the context of fighting on the Western Front and of generating a system of, certainly for the British, a system of war fighting that is not necessarily perfected in 1918, but it gets to a point of great maturity in 1918. And Passchendaele is that kind of intermediate step.
Richard, what was the objective from the Allied point of view?
Well, Haig certainly had in mind...
General Haig, commanding the British forces.
That's right. Haig certainly had in mind a broad breakthrough, but that's not what happens. So if you judge it in terms of the initial aims, then it is a failure. But I think, as Nick says, it's important to recognise that there are different phases of the battle, some of which are more successful than others, and some of which may have short-term success, of course, and are rapidly turned round. So, for example, at Langemarck in the middle of August, both the 36th Ulster Division and the 16th Irish Division are fighting there side by side as they had at Messines. And the Ulster Division makes some early gains, as they had on the Somme, but is eventually thrown back in the face of very stiff German opposition.
And we mentioned these two things, Richard, the Somme and Passchendaele. It's worth noting, and this is a devastating reality for those who took part in Passchendaele. Some of them had already taken part in the Somme, which was bloody beyond words.
Yes, and when they drew comparisons, they generally decided that Ypres, as they often called Passchendaele because it was the third Battle of Ypres, was so much worse than the Somme. There's a nice quote from a man called Jack Christie, who was a Shankill man who served in the Ulster Division as a stretcher bearer, and he talked about the emphasis on the Somme and how unique it was because of the slaughter. But he actually said, "I had some happy times there," and then went on to say that Ypres was never like that. Ypres was hell from beginning to end. And that's because of the living conditions, largely, the mud and the wet. And I think the image that we have of the Western Front as being suffering from heavy rain and the mud swallowing men up, that really does come from Passchendaele rather than from other battles.
Let's say a little bit more, Nick, about how this battle was fought and how you estimate it changed the war.
Yes, well, you have the initial attack begins on the 31st of July. There's an attempt to try and break through, or at least try and make very significant gains in Ypres. But it doesn't necessarily succeed, or the British are able to make some gains, but certainly not as much as they had anticipated. And then what we see with the rain comes in, we see the battle bogging down throughout August, where the British make repeated small-scale attacks. And casualties rise, morale begins to dwindle and is significantly reduced. And then you get to a point by the end of August where the battle has effectively ended, or the British have been stopped in their tracks. And then you have a change of tactics, a change of commander. Sir Herbert Plumer's Second Army come in, and then they restart the battle on the 20th of September. And that phase is, as I think I talked about before, is pretty successful. They're able to gradually claw their way up the high ground, or the ridge or series of ridges that crown Ypres. And they're able to do significant damage to the German army. And then what you have in October is the rains return, and then progress is very limited until eventually the Canadians come in and take Passchendaele, which is at sort of the apex of that ridge, and they do that on the 6th of November.
It is a battle as much against the elements and the topography as it was against the German Empire.
Yes, it's. I mean, the weather is very difficult. The weather is very unfortunate. It's a very difficult place to fight anyway because it's very wet anyway. The Germans have what little high ground there is. And certainly, as the further the British advance into or towards this high ground, the further they have to bring the guns and the ammunition and the men and everything else. And obviously, they're advancing across a kind of wasteland, really. And so bringing up guns in this featureless wasteland, bringing up supplies, is really, really difficult. And it really saps the momentum. Certainly by mid-October, it's really, really difficult to make any kind of advance at Passchendaele.
Richard, how do you assess that this battle changed the war? What was its role in the subsequent battles of the First World War?
Well, I think very much as Nick has said, and I've suggested earlier that the development of bite and hold tactics